Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new edition of Geek to Me Radio. Today, we are joined by Emmy award-winning casting director Deborah Barilsky, talking all about her extraordinary career, casting projects like Home Improvement, Arrested Development, Just Shoot Me, and more. Stand by. Thank you very much for joining us on this latest edition of Geek to Me Radio. I, of course, am your host, James Enstall. We have a full show. We had a lot to chat about with Deborah, so we're going to dive right in. Right now, I'm joined by Emmy Award-winning casting director Deborah Barilsky on the phone right now, talking all about her work, chatting some of the projects she's worked on. Deborah, how are you?
I'm good, as well as one can be in the time of COVID.
It is a very interesting time in which we're living right now, that's for sure.
You know, that is a Chinese curse. It's interesting that you use the word interesting, because a Chinese curse says, may you live in interesting times.
And we certainly are. So,
yes.
Talking about interesting, you've had such an extraordinary career. You've been working and casting in Hollywood on some of these amazing projects for a little over two decades.
35 years.
35 years. Wow. Okay. And I know some of the shows, I'm an 80s kid, so I grew up watching shows like Hardcastle and McCormick. You obviously cast Home Improvement, Frank's Place with Tim Reed. You've got all these great things. I think you won your Emmy for Arrested Development. Am I correct?
That's correct.
So of all the projects, we'll start off with a very easy question and also a hard question. Of all the projects you've cast, which one are you most proud of? What's your favorite?
Well, you can't do favorites, you know. It's like picking a favorite kid.
Sure.
You know, each one has its pluses and minuses, right? So I would say probably, you know, a standout for my career was Arrested Development, because I won the Emmy for it.
Right.
So, you know, but I have, you know, lots of favorites for different reasons.
And when you're doing this job of casting, I know you're probably going through a million different things in your mind. You're seeing a bunch of people. How far along in the casting process do people get to you? Like, is there a general call for certain people, or certain agencies will send people, and then by the time you get to sit down, you're at like the top echelon tier, the people who have been narrowed down to, or are you right in the mix from the beginning?
Well, as a casting director, you're there from the very beginning. So, maybe there needs to be a little discussion about what the casting process is actually like.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So, it depends on what you're working on. For instance, if you're working on a film, you have anywhere from maybe 2 months to 6 months to a year to cast, depending upon schedules and all of that stuff of the people that are involved. If you're doing a television pilot, you have anywhere from about 3 weeks to 10 weeks. Our contracts, if you're casting a television pilot, the contract is for 10 weeks, but it seldom takes that long. So the average time to cast a television pilot is probably 4 to 6 weeks. If you're doing episodic television, that is the stuff that you see on your TV every week, if it's a half hour, you have 5 days. You have a 5-day prep and a 5-day shoot. If you're doing an hour episodic, you have generally about an 8 to 10 day shoot with an 8 to 10 day prep. So your process kind of has to align with the amount of time that you have to cast it. So if you're doing a television pilot, you're starting off from day one. Generally, the casting director might be one of the first people hired. Obviously, the executive producer who creates the show and wrote the show is on board, and there might actually be an actor that's attached to the project or not. In the case of Arrested Development, no actors were attached to the project. We had to hit the ground running. Hmm. I had 3 weeks to do it, and we did the whole thing in 3 weeks. It was a very tough job, rewarding, but very hard. In the case of Home Improvement, Tim Allen was already attached. So I just cast the rest of the people, his family and all of the other characters that were in the show. So at the very beginning, you know, we're there. So if you're doing an episodic, you get the script, you know, you're on board for the entire season. So you are an integral part of the production, in each episode. So let's just do a television pilot.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm hired by the executive producer hires me, but I have to get the approval of the studio and the network if both of those things are involved. Like with Amazon, it's all one thing. So you don't have, well, you might have a studio. I take that back. So I also need to have the approval of the studio network to be able to be hired for a particular project. Then I sit down with the script, you know, and I make my notes and I read it several times and I read it out loud and I read it, you know, and I write down maybe about 10 ideas for each role just to kind of get to go into my first meeting with my executive. And that the purpose of that meeting is to kind of get a general idea of where he or she is headed with the project. There could be a very specific description of the character in the script, or there could, and so it's my job to find actors that align with that description. There might not be a very explicit direction for the character in the script. In that way, I've got a little more elbow room to kind of play around with it.
Sure.
But so from that first meeting, we kind of figure out a parameter for each character. Like it can be like we kind of talk in like types or prototypes. But, you know, I try to get a range of the character, you know, and try to get the idea of what the characteristics are, you know, that the role needs, that the piece needs, that the executive producer needs. And then I feel that my job also is to turn that character upside down and bring in some ideas that might not be directly on the nose for the character, just to give them an idea of what the what this character might look like in a different physical form with a different set of rhythm or, you know, and that's my job too. You know, that's where my creativity comes in as well, is to offer them alternative universes of that character, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So then after we have that meeting, we put out a breakdown, you know, I get submissions, and from the submissions, from my ideas, from input from the studio and network, I start setting up sessions, or in some cases we start setting up offers. We might make straight offers, you know, to certain people. But then once the casting process starts, you know, and I'm talking about pre-COVID, you know,
right, yeah.
I have no idea what it's going to be like now. If they, you know, everything is being done, you know, on self-tapes. So I don't know how this process is really going to change, but I'm just speaking to pre-COVID times. So we would have auditions. We would, you know, they would come in, the executive producer would be there, the director, if he or she could be. And then we just start the process. And it is a process. You know, they might start off with a very specific idea of what they want the character to be, but through the process of casting, they go, oh, you know, it really is better for the whole ensemble that this character kind of fits into this little gap better. Mm-hmm. So the character could shift. The character, what the needs are, could shift. Maybe, you know, because we've cast one person, how the rest of the people are cast could shift. So you're also you're keeping an eye on what the whole ensemble looks like as well.
So is it easier to start with an anchor? Like, obviously, let's go back to Arrested Development. When you get, Jason Bateman, he's the anchor, and then you kind of plot the other people around him? Or is it easier to kind of, or is it not even a process like that? It's like, okay, we have Portia Rossi, now let's...
It would be wonderful if you could do, if you had the time to do like one thing at a time, but you're working full force on all fronts.
Oh, okay.
So, it isn't that easy. If you had like 10 weeks to shoot it, you probably could do it like piecemeal. But you're actually going on full all burners on all characters all the time. I think that for Arrested Development, the first person we cast was Michael Cera.
Oh, okay.
But he was the one that we wanted. We made the decision, but we couldn't cast him until we had the dad. So, we were having auditions, and as we were moving through the process, a few people kind of became the front runners. And Jason came in, and he read at the studio and network, and then we had him read with Michael, and literally that was the core of our series. They cast both of those people on the same day, and then we started to fill in after that. But we were having auditions on all of these people, on everybody, and then as we started, as Michael Cera and Jason Bateman kind of arose to prominence, then we could sort of figure out who the rest of the people were. But this was an ongoing process. You have to go on. When you only have 3 weeks to cast something, you don't have the luxury of doing it piecemeal.
Sure. I'm assuming the answer to this question is going to be time, but is there is that the hardest thing you're up against when you're casting, is just the time constraint, generally speaking?
We're going to take our first break, come back, speaking more with Deborah Barilsky, all about casting in her Emmy Award-winning career. Stand by.
Hi, this is Andrea Romano. I happen to be the voice director for many animated series, including The Justice League. You are listening on Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to the show. This segment brought to you by Marcus Theaters. MarcusTheaters.com is the website. Go to that website right now. You can check out all the features there are. For example, did you know if you order now on the app or on the web, you can save 20% on your popcorn, soda, and candy? All movies for a limited time are just $5. That doesn't include the parking lot cinema. They've got throwback films at throwback prices. You can check out all this stuff. Find out where the Marcus Theater in your area that might be open. They're starting to open back up with safe social distancing. I know some people aren't ready. I am very much ready. I want to go back to the movie theaters and see the movies on the big screen. This is something I've terribly, terribly missed. It's understandable. I understand we needed to shut down, but Marcus Theaters is starting to open back up responsibly. You'll be required to wear a mask, and they're doing safe social distance practicings throughout, and they're making it safe for you to go back to the movies. Hopefully, sooner rather than later, this will all kind of seem like, wow, we made it through 2020. Remember when we couldn't go to the theaters? Well, that's what we're looking for, that to have that be a memory. I want to get back to the theaters. Marcus Theaters wants to see you back. Go to the website. If you're not safe going out yet, you can bring the movie experience home. You can order their ginormous bags of popcorn. You can order movie-sized candies, and they'll have them shipped right to your front door. So you can have the movie-going experience, or at least some semblance of it, at home. MarcusTheaters.com is the website. Find the location closest to you, buy your tickets, check out what they have going on, all that and more right from the website, MarcusTheaters.com. When we took our first break, we were speaking with Emmy Award-winning casting director Deborah Barilsky, and we asked her, is time the biggest enemy to casting?
Yes. Yeah. Even if you don't have two weeks and 4 days to cast it. I'm not kidding. What happened was the executive producer, Mitch Hurwitz, had been waiting and waiting and waiting for Fox to pick up this series, you know, his pilot. And it wasn't happening, and it wasn't happening. And it was a single camera, which meant that most of the single cameras are picked up in January because it takes longer. It takes longer to shoot them, and it takes longer in post-production. So they usually pick them up earlier in the season. And I think this one wasn't picked up until February. He had already taken another project. And so we were kind of working back and forth between his two projects. And I had a deadline because we had a hard deadline. Because if we didn't finish by a certain amount of time, they wouldn't have time in post-production to finish before they had to submit it to the studio network for consideration. So even if you don't have to do it in 2 or 3 weeks, during pilot season, which is generally like January to like April every year, although that has switched around a little bit over the last decade, but you really have to work fast because think about this. Every single network, every single studio is looking for people for their projects at approximately the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't work fast, you lose your choices. So, you know, I kind of, I think one time when I was doing an interview, I likened casting during pilot season that all of the actors in the world are thrown up in the air. And you try to catch them before they hit the ground.
That's a very good visual too. I can actually see.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's 2 or 3, 4 people maybe fighting over one particular actor. So you have to move fast. It helps when you have a really great project, you know, so what helped with the rest of development was that it was so well written.
Yes,
that
it was.
I didn't have to talk people into auditioning. People were clamoring to get in. So that part of it really helped.
So that
really helps.
That was actually going to be another one of my questions. And again, we'll stay on to rest of development for just a moment since we've got that one in our hand. How often are you requesting certain people and how often are people being submitted to you for a project like this? Is it an even mix, generally speaking?
Oh, it's a continual process. I don't think I can quantify it in that way.
Gotcha.
It's literally like the phone and the emails never stop during pilot season. Never. I mean, I'm not kidding. The phones never stop. And then since email has come in, it started coming in the the mid 90s, but not to such great use as it is currently.
Mm-hmm.
I literally, probably by the time we were doing Arrested Development in 2003, I was getting probably 100 emails a day of things that I had to deal with. They were, you know, some of them were submissions, but some of them were the studio is asking this and the network wants to know this. And, you know, are you really wanting my client for this? And we're working on a deal for this actor. We need your input because he wants more than we have budgeted. So it's this continual, just never stops.
Yikes. And with certain casting, I'm always curious, someone like Liza Minnelli, I can't imagine she's asked to audition very much. Was that an offer that you guys knew you wanted her for Lucille too? Or did she actually come in and audition?
No. She did not audition. And basically, that was that, you know, Mitch Hurwitz says, we want her for this part. And I said, well, all I can do is ask. So I asked, and it happened that here's what I think happened, and this is kind of my own interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Her marriage was breaking up, and I forget who the guy was, but it was kind of like going on the rocks, and she just wanted to get out of New York. So she was happy to come to L.A. to meet with Mitch, and Mitch is, I have to tell you, one of the most interesting, charming, funny. Well, you can imagine he wrote that script.
Sure, yeah.
So I know that as soon as I could get Mitch in the room with somebody or at a lunch with somebody or coffee with somebody that he would woo them because he just had this ability to set people at ease, to make them feel like they were taken care of, and he was just this kind of, I don't know, just kind of a warm elf. And I just, you know, he, and so he, they, you know, I I met her, I brought her to him, I met with them, and I let them be for a little while. And she was laughing and giggling, and I knew that she was going to do the show. So that's how that happened.
And a question I'm not sure if you can answer, because I'm not sure if there are still non-disclosure things out there that are still in perpetuity for things like that. But being as it, obviously you must do your best work under pressure, because this was the one that you won an Emmy Award for casting. But was there anybody who you made an offer to, who turned it down, who got away, who you end up, and you don't have to say who it is, but was there anybody who said, nah, I don't think I want to do it?
Are you talking about Arrested Development?
Yes, specifically about Arrested Development. Yeah.
No. I don't think there was one person that we wanted that we didn't get. As I said, you know, people were just like all over. The hardest part, I think, was we had a hard time casting Job.
Oh, really?
Only because I thought it was going to be the easiest part. And for those of your viewers that don't know Arrested Development, he is the eldest son, and he is the kind of ne'er-do-well, a magician by trade, runs around on a Segway, and is part of this, you know, circus of characters that are in the show. But what was happening is that the character really needed to have an odd combination of things, and that is absolute zaniness but with gravitas. And so the zaniness was easily gotten from a number of people, and I won't say, and we cast for that part. And I don't know if I want to go into this whole story, but literally we had everybody. It was a Wednesday. We were supposed to start the show on Friday.
Wow.
And we didn't have the Job yet. And so the studio and network gave me till Monday to kind of do a crash, you know, and just try to, you know, we're going to give you an extra 3 days. Let's see what you can find. And so I started going through old lists, and you know, you just do what you can. You know, you just kind of backtrack, look at everything. I noticed on one of my lists that Will Arnett, I had cast him in a pilot like a year and a half before. And I went, oh my God, Will Arnett, he'd be perfect for this. And so I called his manager, and his manager said, you know, he really wanted to opt out of pilot season. So he took a job at the Roundabout Theater in New York. And the Roundabout Theater is, for those people who don't know, is a professional theater in New York. And they do closed end runs. So the runs will only be for like 6 weeks or 8 weeks. So they have no outs. When the actors sign up to do the show, they can't get an out for anything else. So he said he just took himself out of pilot season. So I moved on. I thought, oh my God, that was such a great idea. And so I'm moving along, and the very next day, and I have to tell you, this is you know, we were still using videotapes, digitals, you know, that we didn't have digital yet. Digital came in a couple of years later. So when we wanted an actor, when we wanted to see an audition, they had to go on tape in a city. That tape had to be overnighted to us in L.A. So it was a much longer process. You know, with digital, we can stream it right away, but not with before that. So his manager called me the next day and said, is that role still open? And I said, yes, it is. It's still open. He says, you're not going to believe this. He says, but Equity kicked him out of the play because he's Canadian.
Oh, my God.
And I know. And so so we got him on tape right away on Thursday, saw the tape on Friday. The producer said, oh, my God, that's it. But keep looking just in case. We got him on a plane. He met with the producers on Sunday. He read for the studio and network on Monday morning, and he was at the table reading on Monday evening. That's
wow.
How fast that happened. And, you know, that sometimes happens that way, you know. And I have to say that, you know, I have a special place in my heart for Will Arnett, because every single interview he's done in the last 15 years, he's mentioned me.
Aww.
Well, because he was the first pilot that I cast him in he was fired from. And it didn't make any sense to me. And I wrote him a letter, and I just told him what I knew about it, and that I had a lot of faith in him, and that I knew he was going to do better things, and just hang in there and blah, blah, blah. And he mentions that letter and my kindness every single time he does an interview. And And I don't even, I guess I mentioned that, his kindness, because he remembers me, you know?
Sure, yeah. And now he's the voice of Batman for Lego, so that's pretty cool that he's given you thanks and all these things.
Right.
That's so cool. And again, that's the one you won the Emmy for, so that's got to be a huge source of pride. Like I said, you must do your best work under pressure because you had such a time crunch, and it was this amazing diamond of a show that we've now enjoyed two extra seasons of thanks to Netflix.
Right.
It's just amazing. You worked on so many projects, and there's one in particular that stood out on your IMDb resume to me because I was a ginormous fan of this show. I planned my nights around watching Doctor.
Oh my gosh.
And I feel that nobody remembers that show except for me and my best friend Gary, because he would come over to my house and we would watch Doctor when we were in junior high. And I love that show. That is what really grew my love for Matt Frewer.
We're going to take another break. Pause right here. Come back talking more with Emmy Award winning casting director Deborah Barilsky. So please stand by.
This is Ed Asner, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio. I can't tell you how exhausting it's been humoring this geek. He is terribly costly and time-consuming. I ask for mercy, and there is none to be had with this geek.
We are back, talking with Emmy Award-winning casting director Deborah Barilsky. For those of you just joining us, we were talking with her. One of my favorite projects was a show called Doctor, ran three seasons back in the late 80s, very early 90s. And she mentioned that was one of her very favorite projects, and she started to elaborate on why that is.
Well, I have to tell you, that was so much fun to work on. The executive producer, whose name is
Norman Steinberg.
That's it, Norman Steinberg. He was so much fun to work with. You know, he had been a protege of Mel Brooks.
Oh, wow.
He had worked on the show, on the film My Favorite Year. He worked on, you know, Men in Tights. And he was sort of like having a mini Mel Brooks as your boss. He was so much fun to be around. He made the process wonderful. He wanted to read with all the actors, and that doesn't happen. You know, he wanted to read with every single one of them. And he spent so much time with every actor in the audition that everyone felt left when they left. They felt like they had booked the role because they had spent so much time with him, you know, but it was so much fun. What we did is I was partnered with Cammy Patton at that time. And prerequisites, let's put it that way, for the casting was that we cast a lot of people who were good at improv.
Yes.
And so what we would do on the show was we would do a couple of the scenes as they were written. And then Norman would say, okay, this one's for you. And he says, you can do whatever you want. Just kind of maintain the same maintain the blocking as much as you can so that we can cut it together. And so then they did one where they just did whatever they wanted. And, you know, obviously within the confines of the script and the plot, it was so much fun being at the taping nights for these shows because it was a blast. You know, it just was so much fun. I never still to this day understand how the editor, you know, matched and came up with the final edit, because there was so much material and it was so much disparate material. I still have a lot of praise for whoever the editor was, and that name is escaping me too.
And I'm a huge fan of improv. I think improv should be taught in high school to people just because it's going to make their life better overall. But to have that kind of it, because I always kind of wonder with certain shows, like we had Rahul Kohli on for My Zombie, and some of the scenes are just so natural. And I asked him, I said, is any of this stuff improv? Is it scripted? And that's, I think, some of the best shows is you can't tell, but if there's that element of improv, it adds so much to the scene, to the take.
Right.
And was that another thing where you kind of cast everybody on their own, or was it you got Matt Frewer and you knew he was the anchor and you kind of cast around that? Which kind of which way did that project fall?
God, it was a long time ago. But I think we probably made the, you know what? I think I take this back, and I'm remembering. I'm pretty sure that it was a cast contingent project, which means that we had to get the lead before they would give us a green light for the project.
Ah.
So I think we did work on the lead first on that one, if I'm not mistaken. You know, and while we were doing all of this, we were also kind of casting a little bit, you know, as well, just because we couldn't waste the time. Anyway, so I think that was it. That was so much. It was really a fun project. You know, it didn't feel like work at all. That was like just a blast.
And there's so many other projects that I grew up watching, like Just Shoot Me, with just a phenomenal cast. I mean, you had Wendy Malick, David Spade. Just when you're going into a project, you said you do so much work. It sounds like you're reading the lines and you're kind of formulating the prototypes for these people. Is there anybody when you first see a script that you immediately like, we want this person, I know we're going to make an offer to this person? And then how much, in your opinion, does the casting kind of evolve versus what you originally envisioned versus what you get?
We're going to take our next break, come back, continuing our chat with Emmy Award-winning casting director Deborah Brilski, so please stand by.
All you need is loving. We got to have good loving. Good loving, baby.
Hi, this is Henry Winkler. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
We are back. Geek to Me Radio, the show that would not be possible without the help of our premier sponsor, the City of St. Charles. Go to the website, discoverstcharles.com. They are gearing up to start their Legends and Lanterns. It might look quite different from festivals in the past. This is still an outdoor festival. It's still planning on going ahead, but provisions are being made for how things might be impacted still by COVID. Obviously, people want you to have fun. They want you to be safe while you do so. This is a family-friendly event, and they want everything to go off without a hitch. And they're planning that now. You can learn more about the festival, learn more about the things there are to see and do in St. Charles by going to the website, discoverstcharles.com. You can plan your trip if you're from out of town, you want to get away for a while, come on out. There's a lot of restaurants right now, obviously summer, that offer patio seating, so you don't have to worry about being in a restaurant around other people. If you can find out which ones are doing curbside pickup, if you live in the area and want to grab something, a treat from one of these places, find out which ones are doing curbside pickup still, and you can order and go to their website from the main website, discoverstcharles.com. As we always say here, it's an historically good time. Our huge thanks to the Convention and Visitors Bureau of the great city of St. Charles. Before we took our last break, we were chatting with Emmy Award-winning casting director Deborah Brilski, and we asked her about how casting choices, how character decisions might evolve during the casting process.
You know, it differs with each project. I think when we're doing that first meeting with the producer, we have like a wish list as well as like a prototype list. Mm-hmm. And with that wish list, we take that to the studio and network. And if they agree, then we start making offers. It just really depends on the show. I think that, let me think if I can remember here, like Arrested Development. I'm trying to think if there, well, he knew that he wanted David Cross in the show. And so he sent him the script. Mitch sent him the script and said, what role would you like to do? But you can't do I think he sent him a script and says, you can do any role you want except the dad and the women. Or you could do any age-appropriate role except that. And we thought that he would do Joe, but he wanted to do the other character.
Hmm.
And then Jeffrey Tambor was somebody that we just was the first choice and we made an offer to. And here's an interesting story. Jeffrey Tambor and David Cross's character were not going to be in the whole pilot.
Oh, really?
They were only because Jeffrey's character was going to be arrested and go to jail. And then David Cross, they were going to get divorced and he was going to be gone. But they both tested so well. And by the way, neither of them really wanted to do a series. So they were fine being like a guest star in the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
But it they tested so well that one of the prerequisites for picking up the show was we had to make both of those guys series regulars. And they loved Mitch so much, they loved the show, they loved the writing so much that they both signed on. Let me think. George Siegel was somebody that I went up from the very beginning, and he actually came in and read. He brought his banjo. let's see. What was the question again? I got a little lost.
Curious if you automatically, like when you first do your first read through the script, if there's someone in mind like, we want to get this person for sure, and then how much your perception of that character might morph as you go through the casting process.
Well, it does. You know, I kind of touched on that before. I guess what I'm bucking against is that there's no rhythm. There's no, it always happens this way. There's no like routine.
Hmm.
It's like, it's one of the reasons I like casting is that no 2 days are the same.
Sure. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Literally, the person that you want is like doing a deal with you, and all of a sudden they get offered something else and they're gone.
Hmm.
So there's, or, you know, the person that you hired is working on another show, and the other show says, okay, we'll have them the first 2 weeks, you can have them the second 2 weeks, and then their schedule changes, right? And so then you've got to recast because they've got dibbies because they hired them first. So I'm just trying to think about specifics. Well, you know, one thing that happened on Home Improvement, you know, Patricia Richardson was not the first mom, but not the first wife to Tim Allen. We had cast Frances Fisher, and she's a lovely actress. But if you know who Frances Fisher is?
I believe so. I know the name. I'm trying to place her.
Okay. I think the character, the role that most people quickly align with her is she played the mom on Titanic.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Redhead.
Yeah.
You know, so she's a terrific actress. But what we were needing for, you know, let me back this up. When we were casting the role, what my producer said, who also created Roseanne, said, we need, you know, Roseanne was like this kind of loose cannon, and we need somebody, I'm just like not getting names today. Who played her husband?
That was John Goodman.
Thank you, John Goodman. My goodness. I'm sorry, John Goodman. I know your name. I'm just old. He said, we need somebody like John Goodman who anchors her. We need like the same kind of person, an anchor for Tim Allen, so that he can be crazy and she can be the anchor. So when we cast Frances Fisher, she was lovely and they had great chemistry. But the problem was, is that she's a little etheric. There is a, she's not as rooted. She's more, and I'm talking literally about the essence of a person.
Mm-hmm.
And we were finding that she just wasn't like, anchoring the scenes like we needed to have them anchored. And so we're like 3 or 4 days into rehearsal, and we get word that one of the first people that we were interested in, who was Patricia Richardson, who had another deal with Disney, that deal fell through because the producers of that other pilot had to drop out of the pilot because of a sick child.
Oh.
And so all of a sudden she had a deal with Disney, but no project. And so we just really quickly set up a meeting with our producers. She was one of my first thoughts. So I was very happy when that all kind of came down that way. And as you know, Patricia Richardson is indeed that kind of anchor for Tim. You know, she is, you know, a no-nonsense, theater-trained, really wonderful actor. And she did exactly what we needed. She was funny. She kind of held him in check, you know, and when that needed to happen. And as you know, they had great chemistry. So,
yeah. And the talk, you just mentioned theater. I know that's kind of where your background lies in theater directing. Your degrees are in theater directing. You've done theater directing in, I think, 4 or 5 different states. Was that when you went to get your degree in that? Is casting directing anything you ever kind of had on your horizons?
Oh, I didn't even know what that was. You know, I would have a bachelor's in theater from Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. I was raised in St. Louis. And then I have a master's degree in directing and theater management from Illinois State University in Bloomington Normal, Illinois. And I thought I was going to be a theater academic. My second job out of graduate school, I was teaching at Cal State Long Beach in the theater department. And after I was there for about 3 years, here I am, I'm 25 years old and I've reached my dream. And it just, I had this kind of wanderlust and I thought, you know, if I'm teaching in college at 25, I bet you I could be teaching in college when I'm 30. So I decided to like just explore my options a little. And I ended up taking a job in Anchorage, Alaska for like a year and a half. I came back, I worked at South Coast Rep. And all through this time, I have the thrust of my career was theater with a specialty in theater management. So I did publicity, promotion, front of house programs, advertising, marketing. I did all of that stuff for the theater as well. And one day I woke up and I just said, I never want to write another press release ever. And anybody who's ever written a press release understands that sentiment. And I have been doing that for 10 years, you know, ever since I was an undergraduate. And so I thought, you know, I'm living in LA and I'm in the film and television capital of the world. Why don't I see if my skill set transfers to something in film and television? And I knew nobody. I didn't know one person who had a job of any substance. You know, I knew actors, of course, but I didn't know producers, directors. I knew nobody. And so, but I had great office skills. And so I joined a couple of temp agencies that service the industry. And my second job, I was sent to Lou Grant. And some of your listeners won't know what that is, but it was the number one show in the early 80s. And I felt like I had landed in a pot of heaven because it would be like similar now to like somebody maybe their first job on Stranger Things or on, you know, you name your favorite show, and that was what I got.
Wow.
So I landed on my favorite show as an assistant to the producers and a script person. And I was there for a year and a half. And from that vantage point, I just started like just checking things out and talking to people and trying to figure out where I would go. And luckily, I had a really great boss who said that he would help me once I figured out what I wanted to do. And so when I figured out that it was casting, I went into his office and I said, hey, you know, you said you'd help me. And he said, yeah, I did say that. And I said, I want to get into the casting department. And they had a casting department at that particular production company that was Mary Tyler Moore Studios, MTM. And he picked up the phone and called the head of the studio right in front of me and said, I want this gal. I got a great gal here. She's wonderful. What can we do for her? And I was in the casting department the next season.
Wow. It's one of those kind of right place, right time, just the way you traveled and you ended up there. And and we actually had Ed Asner on the show last year. And
he's a dear. I've worked with him twice. I did a Lou Grant with him. And then in the 90s, I did a show called Thunder Alley, in which he was the patriarch of a family, you know, that ran like a race car driving car shop in Indiana. And Haley Joel Osment was his grandson.
Oh, wow.
He was like 4 years old when I cast him.
Wow. It's amazing how many, when you think about, you know, they play that game like 5 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Casting, I'm sure, is a much smaller world because you've worked with so many people.
We're going to take our next break. Come back, continuing our chat with Deborah Borilsky. Please stand by.
Hi, I'm Ken Schreiner. I was the voice of the Green Arrow in the Justice League Unlimited. I play Scotty Baldwin on General Hospital. So when you're not watching General Hospital, listen to Geek to Me Radio.
And we're back, wrapping things up here on Geek to Me Radio. Huge thanks again to Emmy Award-winning casting director Deborah Brilski. This was a brilliant chat. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Hopefully you have too. As we wrap things up here, my last question to her was talking about people she's worked with and advice that she actually has for aspiring actors.
Oh, yes. Because, you know, I often when I like doing like seminars and talking to actors, I always tell them, I said, listen, don't burn bridges and always be professional and polite. Because in the world at large, it's 6 degrees of separation. But in the business, it's 1 or 2. So literally, someone you know can get to almost anybody in our business. So even though it feels like a big, gigantic, you know, conglomerate that you can never break into, it's actually a small business. So, you know, you need to be aware that there are repercussions for everything that you do.
Absolutely. And I know you do teach and you offer seminars and things like that for people who are wanting to kind of gear their lives that way. Am I correct?
Yeah. You know, teaching is kind of a mixed bag right now because everything has to be online. But I also do coaching. I do audition coaching. I teach audition technique. I mean, if there's anybody in earshot here who would like to have an audition coach, audition coaching, excuse me, or would just like some career advice, may I give them my email?
Please do. Yes.
Okay. It's, DB, and that's like Deborah Brilski, D as in dog, B as in boy, casting. casting at gmail.com. And let me know that you heard us, you know, on James's podcast. So that's dbcasting@gmail.com.
Perfect.
Thanks for letting me do the plug.
Oh, anytime. That's great. I always like to let people know. Obviously, we have guests on here and they're always doing projects and things like that. So that's part of the service, is making sure that your message gets out there as well.
Right.
And are you on Instagram, Twitter? Do you have any social media or websites you want to give out for people who want to keep up
with you? Do you know? I don't. I kind of, you know, came of age in a different time, and I do not have Instagram and I do not have Twitter. I'm on Facebook and email. And I suppose that, you know, I actually am working with somebody and we're starting to improve my social media stance. And I'm working with somebody right now who is, so that information is TBA.
Gotcha. Well, we'll keep up and we'll make sure that the listeners know where to find you. And please let me know. I'm happy to send people your way as well.
Okay.
And it's been a fantastic time. This has been not only educational, I just love hearing the stories. I could probably talk to you for another hour and just keep getting all this behind the scenes stuff. It's great. It's like the commentary on the DVDs, which is one of my favorite things to get physical copies of DVDs and shows and movies, is all the behind the scenes talk. This has been phenomenally educational and very interesting. Deborah Brilski, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. It was fun. Thank you for asking me.
That's going to do it. And I'll wrap it up for another segment of Geek to Me Radio. Make sure you're following me on Twitter and Instagram at Geek to Me Radio, and of course facebook.com/geek to me radio. You can also find me on Pinterest, and please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just go on YouTube, search Geek to Me Radio. Deborah wanted me to mention to you that if you were interested in working with her, taking some courses Zoom or in person, if you're in the St. Louis area or when she's out in LA, she is doing a sliding scale pay because of COVID. So if you think, how could I afford to work with someone of this caliber? She's working on a sliding scale because of COVID. So reach out. She gave her email address earlier in the broadcast. We will put that up again so that you can reach out and contact her. Because if you're going to get into film and television, you may as well work with someone who's experienced, who knows what they're doing, and has the kind of clout and gravitas that Deborah has. We're going to stop right there. We're going to wrap the show here. And until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I sound be. It's not in the way you watch the flash. It's not in the way you love Scotty Young Art. It's not in the way you play Mario Kart. It's not in the way you look when you make Game of Thrones references. That's a show. This is Geek to Me Radio.
Thank you, Bluth Enterprises. Good night.
Hi, this is James Enstall, host of Geek to Me Radio, and in honor of my favorite Themyscirian, I've decided to become an Amazon warrior.
Hera, give me strength.
The next time you want to buy something from Amazon, go to geektomeradio.com first and click on our Amazon affiliate link. Simply shop like you normally would, and when you check out, a small percentage will go towards supporting the show. So remember, the next time you want to search Amazon for the latest Wonder Woman graphic novel or parts for your invisible jet, click through from geektomeradio.com first.
The world was in peril. Would you have me stand by and do nothing?